Welcome, everybody, to day two of the Cannabis Science and Policy Summit here at City University of New York, sponsored by Botech Analysis. I'm Radical Russ. We are in the main hall, and joining me at the desk, we have Dan Riffle, formerly with the Marijuana Policy Project, currently working in the U.S. House. How you doing, Dan?
Awesome. How are you, Russ?
I'm fantastic. I saw your name on a few of these panels here. The next one coming up, Ideology and Industry in the Legalization Process. And this is something that's of great import to my listeners because a lot of them come from the activism side, and they see this industry coming in and taking over. And there's some consternation about the fact that we got a lot of guys that know a lot about business, not a lot about weed.
Yeah.
So what are some of those conflicts that you're going to be talking about, and how could we resolve some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, I was a prosecuting attorney before I joined the legalization movement. I see it as a waste of law enforcement resources, and that's why I think marijuana should be legal. But, you know, one of the things that Jonathan Calkin said yesterday is that marijuana should be just legal enough, and should be legal enough to meet demand, not so legal as to increase demand. And I see, you know, the industry moving in, and, you know, the industry is a business that sells a product. And the way that any business that sells any product works is to increase demand for their product. So, you know, a lot of the folks here at this conference are looking at other models outside of the big business industry perspective that are, you know, more focused on public health, nonprofit models, B Corp models, government monopoly models, those sorts of things. And, you know, their interests may or may not align with, you know, the consumer interest, but, you know, it might be a situation of strange bedfellows where even though their interests don't necessarily align, they have a common enemy, or at least, you know, a common person that or entity that they're suspicious of in the industry.
What Jonathan Calkins was talking about and some of the other presenters I've heard have been ideas that would be about keeping the price of marijuana high enough that it deters extra consumption but doesn't increase a black market, trying to find that sweet spot. Is that the idea we're talking about?
Yeah, a little bit of that, and then also just making sure that we don't have, you know, advertising practices that, you know, are akin to what we see with alcohol, where, you know, I can't watch a football game on Sunday without getting drunk just watching the thing with all of the ads. You know, there's liquor store. I live in D.C. There's liquor stores on every corner, mostly in poor and minority neighborhoods. You know, everybody here is a veteran of the tobacco years in the 80s and 90s with Joe Camel, and, you know, trying to increase their market, trying to, you know, increase the amount of the product that, you know, heavy users use. And those are the type of things that the science and the health people here are trying to avoid. Which, you know, again, is anti-industry, but not necessarily anti-industry in the way that, you know, a lot of consumers are suspicious of the industry.
Is it unfair, though, to have that perspective on cannabis when we're talking about people whose experience in public health with alcohol and tobacco? We're talking about two very destructive drugs.
Yeah.
And with cannabis, this default that if more people are using it or the people using it are using it more, the default of that being bad seems false to me in that some of those people, some of those new consumers might be switching off of OxyContin, might be switching off of other, you know, making substitutes. Is there an argument for that substitution effect?
So the first thing I'll say is that, you know, on the scale of harms, marijuana is way down towards the bottom, significantly less harmful than alcohol, even more significantly less harmful than tobacco. Those are deadly drugs that kill people. Marijuana just isn't. You know, what the harm of marijuana, as Jonathan Calkins put it yesterday, is not an active negative. It's more the lack of a positive. It's the risk that, you know, somebody might just be wake and bake all day, and, you know, maybe they're functional, but, you know, they're not curing cancer or something. And so, you know, it's not a huge public health risk. It's not a big harm. For me, you know, I will readily recognize that there are jazz musicians who make beautiful music because of cannabis that they consume. There are artists who paint beautiful portraits because of cannabis that they consume. There are, you know, just abnormally high-strung people who need to relax at the end of the day, just like some people who drink alcohol like to have a glass of bourbon or a glass of wine at the end of the day. And those are net positives to society. But, you know, at the end of the day, marijuana is a drug. Cannabis is a drug. It does have dependence potential. There are people who have cannabis abuse issues, cannabis dependence issues. And, you know, so you have to weigh those things against each other. So, you know, for me, it's a drug. It poses problems. It's significantly less problems than other, you know, more dangerous drugs. But nevertheless, you know, there are risks there that you have to account for and build into your policymaking.
I hear them getting ready for the next panels, and I know you're on the next panel, so we better wind this up and let you go. But if people want to learn more about this, do you have any references, resources, or contacts you'd like to give out?
You know, I think if you just go to the website from the conference, there's, you know, myriad links and articles and bios and those sorts of things. So
cannabis-summit.org. Dan Riffle, thank you so much.
And thank you so
good
much,
luck
Russ.
With everything you're doing.
You too.